Grace greetings and welcome to the Deeper Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Paul White. It's February the 28th, and you're listening to the Deeper Daily Podcast, Essay Edition. There's a lot to be said for living in the moment, for not dwelling too much on the past or being so focused on tomorrow that you forget where you are. The danger of not letting go of yesterday is that its failures and regrets hang like a weight you can't put down. The future then changes, because the version of yourself that meets that future is so hampered by the past as to be rendered useless. Living in the future at the expense of today can cost one the invaluable joy of the moment. We can long for change and tomorrow to the point that we miss the beauty of the world around us, the glory of the moment. Longing for the world you hope to create can cost you whatever you might learn in the one you have. It would seem that we are caught in between the two, both yesterday and tomorrow. A careful balance of both informs our present and prepares our tomorrows. In other words, we can truly love life and see good days, independent of our circumstances, if we are both learning and preparing. One leads to the other. What we learn about our experiences of yesterday shape who we are today and influence how we will face our tomorrow. This looking back and looking forward is something like the Roman god Janus, depicted as having two faces. One looks to the future and the other to the past. He is thought to be the source of our word January, a month in which we too look back on where we have come and into the future to where we are going. Human beings share a godlike quality. Well, that's an understatement. We share many. We can choose of our own free will. We can communicate with language and literature. These alone would set us apart from the animal kingdom of Earth. But our greatest shared quality with God is that we remember. We can hold experience not only in our head, but in our heart. Sometimes it seems like memory is more a curse than a blessing. We feel nostalgia and longing for better times. We remember the laughter and the shared times with loved ones we have lost, and our heart breaks all over again when we awake from a dream in which they were once again alive and laughing. Memory connects us to the past, but it has the power to break our hearts. It would be easy, if our faith were to falter, to think that memory is a cruel, sick joke perpetrated by a God who holds freedom out in front of us as an illusion rather than a reality. Because honestly, how free can we be if we are chained to the past? But it's also not too hard to fathom exactly why God allows us what he allows no other creature on earth. I mean, your dog may bury a bone in the backyard, but he does this by instinct, not by preparation. He isn't saving the bone for a day when he has no food. He knows nothing of such time-bound thoughts. He's hiding the bone from other dogs. His instinct demands such survival mechanisms. Well, we don't function on instinct, not at our highest level. We function instead on memory. Memory isn't given so that we can look back fondly, but rather so that we can remember our past and prepare for our future. The ability to remember is accompanied with the greater gift of creative adjustment. We can make course corrections based upon our past, and we can use our past to shape our future. We do something wrong and suffer pain for it, and we know not to do it again. But that's just north of instinct. I mean, your dog would do as much. The difference is that we will not only avoid doing it again, we will come up with a strategy to keep it from ever happening again. And when we are the best version of ourselves, we will communicate our knowledge with others so that they too can avoid the pitfalls and the failures. Now, our memory not only serves us, it serves our fellow man. That is the glorious creative gift that caused the psalmist to say in Psalms 82:6, "You are gods, sons of the Most High, all of you." There is an emphasis in the modern version of the gospel to ignore who you used to be, as that version of yourself has been transformed into a new creation. Identity and awareness of our place in the Father is growing in the church, and this should be celebrated. I mean, knowing who you are and whose you are makes all the difference in navigating a world that won't bother to tell you either of those things. But such an emphasis has a soft underbelly, soft as in lazy and unused. When we envelop ourselves in identity at the expense of the past, we lay down a valuable piece of our humanity. Who we used to be and where we have come from should not be relegated to the trash pile of memory. There is still much to learn as we look back, particularly now that we have our perspective properly tuned to his finished work. Consider how Paul looked back upon Saul. He didn't glorify him, but he doesn't dismiss him. He doesn't claim to be that pre-Damascus road persecutor of Christians, but he also doesn't ignore what he learned from that man. He uses the knowledge he gained as a Pharisaic student of Torah and verbal tradition to systematically stack that knowledge against his revelation of grace. He doesn't let the past break him. There's no moment of angst and condemnation in his writings over the fact that he oversaw the death of a great man like Stephen. We don't even hear him apologize to the early church, but we do see him defer to its great leaders like James and Peter. He may not have let the past destroy him or define him, but he was going to let the past shape him into a man who is self-aware enough to know that he may not know it all. To me, the superb example in the scriptures of looking backward and forward is found in the patriarch Abraham. In his case, the looking is reversed. He looks forward and then backward. Genesis 18 tells the story of the Lord visiting Abraham and Sarah on his way to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. God tells them that they will have a child soon, prompting the humorous exchange between Sarah and God. "I didn't laugh," she says. "Oh, but you did laugh," God replies. Well, God lingers with Abraham and Sarah. One reads this and wonders why he bothers to stop by at all. I mean, he could have just told Abraham about the baby, but he makes a special trip and is then slow to depart. His angels leave for Sodom ahead of him. He and Abraham stand looking towards Sodom, this city that is doomed for their sin and wickedness. And as he lingers, maybe an example of his long-suffering perhaps, Abraham begins his famous plea of, "Lord, would you spare the city if you find 50 righteous? What about 45? What about 40? All the way down to, what about 10? You know the story, and you know how it ends. What you may have overlooked is how both Abraham and God respond the next day after Sodom is ashes. Genesis 19:27 tells us that Abraham went early in the morning to the place where he had stood before the Lord. This is the same place from which he had looked forward towards Sodom. And as he looked, he saw the smoke of the land that went up like the smoke of a furnace. And then verse 29 tells us that God remembered Abraham. God looks back on his encounter with Abraham and remembers to spare Lot because of the intercession of Abraham. Abraham looks back on Sodom and sees the destruction that has been caused. How much of what he sees that day shapes the way he moves forward? Well, it's hard to tell, but the very image of it has inspired orators and commentators ever since. Frederick Douglass used this story in his barnstorming winter of 1866. Less than a year on the other side of the Civil War, Douglass continued to push for equal rights for the black man and to send out a warning to America to look back over the charred land and self-destruction of the last several years and to remember. He famously announced he would show that nations should have memories. As Genesis commentator Walter Brueggemann says of this passage, it makes us see the chaos we have created, and with Abraham, we can then know something urgent about God's call to us. Yes, God's call is urgent indeed. Jesus conferred upon his disciples a kingdom. He literally willed it to them and told them that such a kingdom would give them the right to eat at the master's table and to sit on thrones and judge the tribes of Israel. Now, rather than getting bogged down in the theology of such a verse, catch its spirit. We are inheritors of a kingdom in which we do our greatest work from a posture of rest, both sitting at the table and sitting on thrones. The table represents our rights, what we get to do. The thrones represent our responsibilities, what we must do. Perhaps the responsibility follows the right. Because only when you look back onto what you have and what you are, can you know how to move forward into what you will become and what is expected of you. Look back to look forward. Don't look back and get stuck there. And don't look forward and forget where you are or where you're coming from. To surrender any of these is not only a surrender of your humanity, it is surrender of what makes you most like your Father. The world is watching and they need you, so remember. Grace to you.